It likely has served in different capacities under a succession of presidential administrations, has guided government policy on urban planning, and is a widely cited academic. My name is Sean Britton from 2SER 107.3 in Sydney, and each week Ed and I have a chat about what's the latest news out of the United States, talking everything politics, planning and policy, from sea to shining sea. Find us on iTunes, Wooshka, Facebook and Twitter at US of Ed. A historic meeting of the minds. Donald Trump and Kim Jong-un, both parties have come away crowing and the media has been stuffed with coverage. Certainly Trump is very happy with himself, but I must admit, Ed, I'm a bit lost as to what America actually got out of this one.
The only thing the United States got out of was a meeting between Trump and Kim Jong-un, which was outstanding. That's great. That's fantastic. That means something can start from there, where there was nothing before. So dictating to North Korea wasn't working. And it seems that the Chinese have gotten him to get to the table. Now, whether he'll do anything beyond that, we don't know. The United States has given up quite a lot, you know, moving its troops away from doing combat maneuvers with the South Koreans. But that's not such a big deal. Actually, it saves a lot of money. The bigger thing is, will Kim Jong actually remove any of his weaponry? He says he's going to take down at least one of his rocket sites. He's going to remove one of his testing sites. So there are some things that he says he's going to do. I suspect he's going to remove sites that aren't useful anymore, but at least it'll be a step in the right direction. And the Chinese are going to push very hard to remove the sanctions, the international sanctions, while the United States will keep its sanctions on. The Koreans, the South Koreans, have a big part to play in this. If they can kind of dangle some possibilities out to the North Koreans that says you can be on our side, but not under our control, we might get something happening. But we're talking about a decade from now with very small, short, easy moves. The big thing that Donald Trump did was removed a nuclear weapon being launched anywhere, anytime from North Korea. So you got to applaud him for that.
I'm just interested to mention withdrawing of the troops from the military exercises with South Korea. It did sort of catch South Korea, Japan, even parts of the Pentagon a little bit by surprise. And Trump went and described these exercises as provocative, which is a word sort of straight taken out of North Korean state media. Is this sort of Trump shooting from the hip a little bit?
Of course it is. But it doesn't matter in this case. If he shoots from the hip and it has a good result and not a high price, I think we should let it go. The voters don't really care. As long as the fear is gone, they don't care how it's gone. Those of us who are a bit of wonks on this and want to see words like denuclearization defined and the like, this is a big deal for us, but it's not going to count in any U.S. or any other election. What's going to count is he got them out. And that's big for him when the elections come up in November.
Well, that is quite intriguing because obviously it's a huge propaganda win for North Korea, but also a huge propaganda win, such as it were, for Donald Trump.
It is. It's a huge propaganda win. Now, he's done two things in the time he's been in office. He's gotten this massive tax cut, which is going to send the United States in a spiraling deficit. And he's done this. Everything else he's done has been pretty sorry and pretty bad. But these two things will keep him from being impeached, I think.
And I am just curious, for all the criticism of Trump, and you say there he's done a fairly decent job on this one, how do you think President Obama or one of Trump's predecessors might have handled this historic opportunity differently?
Well, I think a couple of things. One of them, they would have been much more explicit about what the North Koreans were supposed to do, when they were supposed to do it, and what timeline it was going to be done on. And there would be a lowering of the sanctions, but there'd be an awful lot of a collective behavior with the Europeans, with close allies like Japan, South Korea, and Australia. Here, the U.S. is going it alone. So the big difference would be collective action rather than solo action. And the solo action isn't even backed up by the United States military, who haven't bought into this yet.
A less stellar diplomatic performance at the G7 summit in Canada. Firstly, let's go through these ones. Firstly, Trump wants to make the G7 great again, or rather the G8 again, by bringing Russia back into the fold. How does Trump justify this one, Ed?
Well, he doesn't. There's something going on between him and Russia. We don't all know what it is, but there's something going on here. And he wants to bring them back because he owes somebody in Russia something. It's not that he cares about Russia. He cares about his own private interest, which we manifest in many ways with respect to these trade deals. He's trying to trade himself, and I'm talking about his own fortune, back into the game. So the G8's only part of that.
Trump arrived to the G7 late, left early, generally seemed to have bigger things on his mind with the North Korea talk coming up. But the real drama came after he left, calling Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau dishonest and weak on Twitter and withdrawing from a group communique that had already, well, he had already signed. The Trump on Twitter seems a lot more willing to go on the attack against people than he does face to face.
I think, again, this is Mr. Trump, who has the attention span of a gnat. he has no idea what he discussed at the meeting. Other people have recorded it. And he was very tough on them. And the sanctions he's putting on the Canadians are ridiculous. The Canadians have an even balance of trade with the United States if you count in services. He's talking about pig farmers and other kinds of stuff, where there is an imbalance. But if you add in the fuel and things that the United States buys and the maple syrup and the exports that we send in terms of financial services to Canada, it all balances out. So the man first, he doesn't look at any data before he makes any of these comments. This is entirely off the top of his head. He says billions and billions. Well, what does billions and billions mean? When you add it all up, there is no trade gap between the United States and Canada. It's silly.
And yet throws out threats like, let's cancel all trade between America and its partners in the G7 until we get a better deal, until we stop being the piggy bank.
Well, go ahead. If you want to put American workers out of work, if you want to destroy the global economy, go for it. I don't think it's going to happen. The Congress is not going to let that happen. Nobody in their right mind is going to let it happen. But how he can say these things that are so ridiculous and pay no penalty for them is way beyond me.
Some have said if a president set out with the goal of destroying the alliance of Western countries and completely upending the world order global politics has kind of counted on since the end of World War II, there's not much they could realistically do more of than what Trump is already doing. Is Trump going to turn allies into enemies and leave America alone or cozied up with the likes of Putin and Kim Jong-un?
Well, I think there are a couple of things here we have to look at. One of them is the European alliance is in itself not in great shape. Look what happened to Italy recently and the Italians falling out of the system. The Greeks are almost out of the system, and the Brits are getting out. So we have a weak alliance there, and that alliance was shored up by the United States basically saying, if you guys play together, we'll play with you. Well, Trump might actually be a little bit right here. That alliance may not be as important to the United States as it used to be, but that doesn't mean it should be destroyed. The next course of action he doesn't have because he plays one step at a time. But if that alliance falls apart, it'll be very tough on the U.S. economy, as we know.
Allies and political enemies of Trump seem determined in some senses to wait him out. I see a lot of people just personally saying, I can't wait until 2020 or until Trump gets impeached and things go back to normal. But do you really think the system and these alliances will actually recover when Trump moves on, however he moves on? Or has Trumpism gotten too deep?
No, it hasn't gotten very deep. That 30 or 40% of people who support him for the moment. As soon as things change, they'll change with him. This is a very, very shallow transformation and transition. The United States is bigger than this, and I think we'll see it with the next president, no matter who he or she is.
But even if we have another president, do you think American allies are going, well, Trump's gone, but how do we know they're not going to elect another Trump 4 years down the track?
Well, we don't know that, but I think that people are smart enough to know that collective actions always outplay single actions, and another president is going to be hemmed in by a very different Congress. So I think it's very important for people to play the long game here and not the short game. If they keep playing the short game, the Chinese are going to simply eat up the world, and there won't be anybody else to play with. They will be the world leaders.
And just a few notes on what's going on back on American shores before I let you go, Ed. Republicans still split on immigration. House moderates have failed to push through on a bill that would see some young immigrants protected. Now a vote is going to go ahead next week. Any thoughts?
Well, I think the DACA thing will get cured with some long track to permanent citizenship. And then they'll wait for the next Congress and then they'll shorten that. But I think that'll get solved because it's too important to the Republicans who have middle-of-the-road voters for them to let this fail on them at this juncture. Other longer-term U.S. immigration issues are very similar to those around the world, to Australia, to the Europeans who are just... The Italians are turning people away from their shores for the very first time. The Spanish are taking some people in, but not being as vigorous as they were. The French are condemning what people aren't doing. But if you notice what they're doing, they're not letting people in, and certainly the Brits aren't. This is a humanitarian issue that has to be solved in Africa. It's not going to be solved by boat diplomacy.
And just taking a look at what's going on in voting around the country, we could be seeing purges of voters in Ohio as the Supreme Court has upheld a law that would allow the state to drop voters from their rolls if they miss voting in a single election. There's been fears of voter suppression. What's your take on this one, Ed?
Well, that's exactly what it is. And clearly, the Democrats have just held on to their majority by lackadaisical planning and making sure such laws couldn't get passed. It'll mean that the Democrats are going to have to work harder, and I think they can, but they'll have to be much less divided and knock down these laws like they've knocked down abortion laws and other laws one state at a time.
And speaking of division in South Carolina, Mark Sanford became the second House Republican of 2018 to lose a primary this week. Sanford has spoken out against Trump before, and in true Trump style, Trump has, of course, fired back. Ed, this goes back to something you were saying last week about the delicate line Republicans are walking in these primaries and in the 2018 midterms. He's apparently still popular enough with the base. Trump is obviously still popular with the base to a certain extent. And again, I do say sort of normalized amongst the base. You can't campaign with him, but you can't swing too far against him either.
I think you really summed it up properly. But a guy like Sanford could become a Democrat. So the Republicans have to be careful here, or he could campaign for the Democrat. South Carolina is a swing state. Trump cannot carry that state by himself. So the Republican Party is getting very close to implosion, where there will be no Republican Party. It's unfortunate but true. And Trumpism can win because they're the only force out there on the right that's holding itself together. It's not the Republican Party, it's the Trump Party.
US of Ed is produced in the studios of 2SER 107.3 in Sydney. To help support the work we do, go to 2SER.com/donate. Ed and I'll be back next week to talk the latest in American news and politics. Subscribe on iTunes and Wooshka to stay up to date, and show us some love on Facebook and Twitter at US of Ed.